time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hapgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning to you, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. And you've been gallivanting around the east side of Victoria as of late, which looks like you've been having a pretty good time. Hopefully I can come join you in the next week or so somewhere, but you've done a little bit of fishing.
I have. We started our trip probably 10 days ago now, started at Mallacoota. So we drove straight there, 8 hours from the surf coast of Victoria. And then 2 days later, the surf coast goes into lockdown with COVID. So I couldn't have timed it any better, essentially. And for boating enthusiasts out there, Mallacoota is an absolute mecca. It's also where Cooter Craft is built. And funnily enough, I ran into the owner of Cooter Craft. He nearly destroyed my little Staby Craft, Redmond, at the boat ramp. I dropped it off and I was taking my cousin out with me. And he didn't show a huge amount of respect for the little 15-foot Staby. He was launching his, it's called the Boss. It's an 8.5-metre Cooter Craft with twin 300-horsepower racing Mercuries. And it hits just over 85 miles an hour. And he nearly flattened us. So it wasn't the most friendly moment, but, you know, you get those. I understand that.
They're a weapon.
It's been an incredible.
Absolute weapon of a boat, especially in a straight line. I actually sent you an article a few weeks ago. They won the fastest racing boat they did competition with offshore boats that race, and they won the competition. They've actually put a few challenges out to a few other boat manufacturers. So they are a weapon of a boat, and they are designed to go very, very fast, and they cut through the water extremely well, especially with 600 horsepower on the back pad.
Yeah, well, mate, I was almost underneath it. I dropped the boys off, and I think they, you know, when you first launch your boat, in an ideal world, you move the boat up to the end of the jetty or pier or whatever, so you've got room for the other boats to launch. Now, my cousin Sammy, who I was fishing with, doesn't exactly understand that concept. He was a little bit worried, so he's sort of standing with maybe 30 feet in total length between where the little Staby was and the edge of the boat ramp. And the boys in the Cooter Craft have just backed the thing down, and he reckons they've missed the Staby by millimetres, in a little bit of a frustrated sort of effort, I suppose. So, sometimes, doesn't it, Redmond?
I understand where they're coming from. I'm with them. I'm with them. It's everyone's got to learn.
Yeah, you're one of those grumpy locals as well.
Oh, you got to do that.
Won't be buying a Cooter Craft. I'll give you the hot tip.
Have you caught any bloody fish or what?
I have actually. It's been incredible. It's been great. Not offshore. I mean, we went around Gabo Island. That is just beautiful. There's actually been quite a few reports this week of some great fish being caught in 300 metres of water directly off Gabo Island, essentially. So that's quite a few Ks off.
Nice and shallow.
Some really nice bluefin. It was actually the boys in the Cooter Craft that caught it. So there's some big fish being caught around, but a little bit far off for the baby Staby. Earlier in the week, they were getting them in sort of 10 Ks off Gabo Island, roughly 100 metres of water, and there were stacks of fish there. But it dried up towards the end of the week, and obviously the weather played a bit of a role in people being able to get out, because half of the state of Victoria is under torrential rain. But a terrific place to fish. And then we've worked our way slowly back along sort of East Gippsland through Lakes Entrance, fished Lake Tyres yesterday with another Rallo, which was incredible. Soft plastic fishing for flatties and for bass. It is just one of the most exhilarating forms of fishing, because not only can you soft plastic for them, but you swim bait for them. And the surface lures fishing for Australian bass, just the woof that you hear when the fish comes up to launch at it, fishing sort of around the Bem River as well. Like, it's just, there's so many hidden treasure troves throughout East Gippsland. You could spend months upon months fishing for them, Redmond.
I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in the bass scenario, that's for sure, but I do read a lot of magazines and forums and whatnot, and they reckon the Australian bass is tenfold of the American bass on how hard they actually pull and hit lures and whatnot.
And how aggressive. So
they are one of the most aggressive fish, and they literally make the American bass like they make them look stupid how hard they hit the Australian, how hard the Australian bass hit. So I bet that would have been a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're spot on, and it is. It's just the sound. It's like someone's clapping their hands as hard as they possibly can. That's the sound that you hear as you sort of bring the swim baits in and trying to do it as slow as you possibly can. It's almost like the slower that you go, the more enticing it is for fish. A bit like barra fishing, that slow twitch, the big flatties can't sort of resist it. And then we've made our way up further south rather than up, Redmond, to Painesville. We've stayed here the last few nights. The weather's been terrible, so we booked into an Airbnb that's set up on the lake, which has been special. I didn't even know where Painesville was, to be honest. We were just looking for spots because we've obviously been camping for the last sort of 10 days and the kids have gotten a bit ratty. That's been an experience in itself, but it's been great. But a few days in an Airbnb just to sort of settle things down a bit and has made it a bit easy, obviously, with the weather being so terrible. But Painesville as a fishing destination, certainly as a boating destination, it's absolutely terrific. So there's so many places along East Gippsland that have been so impressive. But enough about me. How's your week in fishing been? I know you've been getting on to plenty of squid, plenty of whiting, and we're finally starting to see some early snapper, Redmond.
Yeah, I had a really good week this week, Pat. It was light winds and actually, it's funny, the wind was very all over the place. It was all over the place. Like they couldn't get it right to save their lives. Now, I sort of did a little bit of research myself, looking at the high pressure and watching the rain. And quite often before the rain comes, we get a lot of still weather. And then during the week, especially on I think it was the Thursday, we had it was still in the – it was meant to be blowing, but it was very, very still in the morning. And then the afternoon when the rain hit, it blew up. But they had the weather report the other way around. So we were headed out and we managed to get our bag of calamari, which was good. So 20 big calamari. We also managed to find a big school of salmon in the shallows. And I'm talking up to 70 centimeters, so monster salmon, which you can't catch enough of them for bait. Like, let's be honest, they literally don't go far enough. So I'm stocking up on those, stocking up for squid for bait. The whiting fished very, very well too, with that dirty water. Snapper, I got some beautiful snapper offshore, up to that 5.5 kilo mark, so some beautiful snapper. And there's some good signs right around the bay. So I'm really, really hoping that the early season, when I say early season, which it is now, but I'm really hoping the signs that the early season is showing that the actual season ahead is going to be terrific. So everything is going good. And also the gummies as well. The gummies are fishing well. The schoolies as well. There's really good numbers of schoolies offshore too. So that's fishing. I'm talking right from Portland right down to Gippsland as well. So it's not just here. You've got Western Port, and we're going to get Wayne Blake on next week, and he's going to take us through absolutely everything regarding Western Port and whatever you need to know. He's a genius in that part of the woods. So fishing is red hot at the minute, and it's only going to get better and better. So I'm really looking forward to what's to come in the next month or so, Pat, right through to sort of that April. It's going to be very exciting 6 months.
Let's talk about what is biting right around the country. Let's start in Tassie, Redmond. Now, there's been some interesting captures. Stuart Nichols' personalised sea charters. A September barrel landed at 97 kilos. The King Brown Laser Pro 190X Double D doing the job. It was an absolutely stonking fish. Unusual for a September barrel, certainly given it was there first. Does that excite you?
It's Tassie's a little bit earlier than us, as in the season. So that it is, a little bit late. Like, it's late in the season for those, but it doesn't surprise me with anything with fishing these days, Pat, with what we're seeing. And I tell you what, it's been very, very restricted with travel, as we know, for these barrel bluefin right across the state. So I would put money on them that if you headed down to Apollo Bay, Portland, Port Ferry, and I know into South Australia, Port Macdonald there, and if you were to go out and actually chase the barrel bluefin tuna, you would be in for a shot. I'm getting memories coming up on my phone of last year, the year before, big barrel bluefin tuna. I got 152 kilo, I think it was, in October last year. So that's literally, it was about mid-October. So who knows what's going to happen. The water's still bloody cold out here. We've only got 13 degrees. He's not warming up. It did come up, and it's just not holding its temperature. But it is, it's fishing very, very well right across the state. And like I said, with it being so cold, I'm really looking forward to it. And also in Tassie, fishing land-based around Stanley, there have been some huge flathead caught on soft plastics up to the 50-centimetre range. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about jig heads, Pat. Flathead, I don't reckon you could go big enough without being stupid. A big jig head hitting that bottom and puffing that sand and kicking it up, anything with a nice big paddle tail works really, really well. And what I mean by that, when you hit the sand, you actually create the disturbance, vibrations and whatnot, and the flathead will actually come over and investigate what's going on. So if you are chasing flathead and you think you're not getting the bottom enough, don't be afraid to spark up the jig head size, and really, depending on the current and where you're fishing, but it'll always help your captures.
Fishing out of Pet Dam has seen some great rainbow trouts being caught and being caught using inline spinners that have been working the best. Western Australia, Aaron?
Yeah, Fremantle are producing really good numbers to Trevally on soft plastics as well as chicken, Pat. Don't ever look past chicken. Everything loves chicken, including myself. And fishing around the boat moorings is the key. They love a little bit of structure. So they're fishing quite good. So if you are after some bait, and if you do bleed them and eat them sashimi or fresh, they do come up a treat. A few weeks ago, Pat, we actually spoke about a competition at a Kununurra, which was the Kununurra Barra Bash, where they had over 700 fishes, over 100 barramundi were caught, and a fella by the name of Steve Barnett won a Quintrex Outback 370 Explorer, which was the top prize, not for catching a barramundi, just for buying a $60 raffle ticket and just taking part in the competition. So well done. And the lucky winner who takes out the actual competition in itself, he landed a 111-centimeter barramundi. And this lake is stocked, remember? So it's come from over 1 million fish released in the waterway since 2013. So well done to the Western Australia fisheries over there, creating what's pretty much an amazing fishery with people targeting barramundi well over the 100-centimetre mark. Heading to South Australia, GT Fishing Charters out of Coffin Bay had a great week on the whiting. Huge bag limits, like they literally getting their clients massive bag limits with fish up to that 50-centimetre mark, with squid being the best bait. York Peninsula, some fantastic weather has run through there as of late, and anglers making the effort in the nice, calm, clear water, chasing blue swimmer crabs, which we do love our swimmer crabs, Pat. They're a beautiful creature to eat, and there's plenty of them. So very, very good success for all the anglers out there chasing those. Heading to New South Wales?
Yeah, fishing under Captain Cook's bridge, there's been a huge variety of fish being landed. Redmond, brim, salmon, whiting, Ludric, flounder, flatties, trevally, and soft plastics have been doing plenty of damage. I think it's a great way to go and fish around structure, because it's more engaging. You get to cast and retrieve versus just sitting there with bait. Snapper fishing off Burmy at the moment is fishing quite well. Obviously, the rules and regs that you have to stick to within New South Wales and Victoria predominantly. We just spoke about Western Australia. It's just the rules are go and enjoy yourself. Same thing with South Australia. Queensland, fishing in the Logan, which is based around Moreton Bay, is fishing extremely well right at the moment. Flatties up around the 70-centimetre mark, and plenty of them being caught, as well as plenty of brim. Once again, mixing in a variety of baits, but at the same time, fishing with soft plastics has been quite popular as well. And that is our whip around Redmond for what's been biting right around the country. Now, I want to talk to you before we go to the break about the Grenadier. Now, for those unfamiliar with the Grenadier, this is a company that was
fish.
Born.
That's a fish, isn't it? Blue Grenadier. Beautifully.
This is a car that was born literally in a pub called the Grenadier by a few Brits, and it is landing in Australia back end of 2022, start of 2023. And what it is essentially the old Discovery, the old Defender, the old Land Rover Defender.
Mm. Yep.
And these mates got together and wanted something that was robust in construction, et cetera, et cetera, yada, 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 same sort of spiel. And it's finally hitting our shores. But my question for you is, at a starting price of $84,500, this is its first model. So there's still yet to confirm sort of where it would sit with dealerships, et cetera. That puts it on the same sort of level as the Land Cruiser 79 series. It's far more expensive than probably the most popular in terms of its ratings in terms of the Ford Ranger. Hilux has sold more than any other ute over the past 12 months. It's far more expensive than that. The Land Cruiser 300 series, for example, starts at $89,900 for the GX. And this is starting as a two-door version, which would be like the simplest comparison is the Land Cruiser 7 as the Land Cruiser 79 series, which is around the same cost. Is anyone going to buy it?
There's a few key features that might get a few people over the line. It comes pre-wired, Pat, which getting things wired by Autoelec costs a fortune. So it is pre-wired, so you can get things like winches, roof lights, you can get solar charging, dual batteries, certain towing equipment. So there are a few items that do come standard with it.
You can do that. You can get that from, like, okay, a couple of thousand bucks.
I was trying to make a conversation out of it, Patrick. All right, no, it's not worth it. It's a waste of money. It only throws 3.5 ton. And if I was spending upwards of 100 grand, I want 5 ton. Is that enough?
I mean, it does tow 3.5 ton, which, to my knowledge, certainly the old Defender didn't. The current Defender starts at 71,000. It's got a BMW engine, this. I'm fascinated to see how this is going to be accepted within the Australian marketplace. It's hard enough to get rusted on Toyota fans.
I'd be fascinated to see your first service bill, as well as if something goes wrong, how much it costs to get it fixed.
Well, absolutely. And so, you know, they're all the questions that are going to be asked by Australian consumers. So it's a watch this space.
If they want one to test out, then send one my way. I'll put it to its limits. Fire one over.
The brand backing in Australia starts with a 5-year unlimited kilometre warranty. So it starts in a good place. Its aftermarket sales blueprint will be supported by Bosch Servicing in Australia. So it's a real watch this space. It's an exciting concept because, let's be honest, it was born in the back of a pub. It's something that we can all relate to.
Oh, no, I can. And my ideas have gone nowhere. So let's see how this goes, Pat. Don't go anywhere because there is plenty more to come on Real Adventures. Don't go anywhere because there's plenty more to come on Real Adventures after the break.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for the Social Club. We take your questions from social media. Every week we're giving away Real Brand gear for the best questions. The first one is for you, Redman. Well, for both of us. Mm-hmm. What's the benefit of tuna tubes versus a live bait tank? Is it worth the extra spend on tuna tubes? Love the show, guys. Regards, Matt.
It is definitely worth the investment of both. Now, I use these all the time, the livey tubes or tuna, whatever you want to call them, live bait tubes. Basically, what they are is a plumbed in section of the boat which has tubes attached to it, which has constant water flow coming through those tubes and out the top. Now, you can control the volume of water that gets pushed through them. And what they help you with is actually being equipped and ready to drop your live baits into the water in a hurry. So say, for instance, that I'm out off, so slimy tubes is what they're really referred to as. And if I'm out off Eden chasing marlin, and the reason you need both, I'm going to go into both, is so what happens is you head out, you find your live bait, beauty, let's all catch all the live bait, all the slimies, let's catch them all, drop the bait jig down, pull them up. You then fill your live bait tank up. You then pre-rig two live baits into those slimy tubes, ready to go and ready to catch a marlin. Now, what I mean by that is when you rig your baits, we bridle them up through the nose and put a hook in front of them, say an inch in front of the actual bait in itself with the Dacron or the wax thread, whatever we're using. And that way, if you do come up across a bait ball, or if you are marking marlin, or if you're skip baiting and you want to put a livey, drop it back, you're not there spending 10 minutes trying to rig a bait. They're ready to go. They're in the slimy tubes. They're staying alive. But in the live bait tank, you've got another 20 or 30 slimies in there ready to go. So you need to keep them alive. You can't just have two baits, because if one dies in there or if it gets caught up, that's the best way to go about it. And going also for kingfish, now we are fast approaching kingfish season. I know it is a little bit far, it's still a distance away, but it works really well for the kingfish too. If you're knife jigging and trying to get kingfish to start, you drop two live, or if you're ticking live baits around and you get fish, there's nothing better than putting live bait back in the water where the fish actually are feeding in a feeding frenzy. And that's how you do it, by just having two more in the live bait tubes ready to go, drop them in and off you go. So once again, you've also got another 20 in your live bait tank. So there's different reasons why, but there's a few reasons there to hopefully get yourself to put a live bait tank in and also slimy tubes.
How much did you spend on your slimy tubes?
Oh, I'd have to. That's actually a good question. It might be around $1,000.
No, we're talking, and that's plumbed, as in that's installed as well. Because it's one thing to have your RP of, it's going to cost you $600 an angle, I think. So, fantastic. I've just, upgraded the boat. I've put the slimy tubes on. It's going to cost me $600. And then slugged with another $500 in installation.
Well, that's right. I think it was about $400 roughly for the tubes in themselves. But then you've got to put the pump system in. And then you've got to pay the labor of the people to actually put it in. So you're looking between probably $700 and $1,000, depending on the brand that you go and depending on who fits it for you. So we'll say between, $700 to $1,000. And that's going to have you installed a really good set of slimy tubes, which is going to catch you more fish, Pat.
Next question is from Ben. Good on you, Matt. Thanks for that question. Ben, g'day, boys. Love the show. Keep up the great work. I have a question in regards to squid fishing. Is it best to always be on the drift when fishing for squid, or is it best to anchor down and target one specific spot? Cheers, Ben.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Ben, but drifting is the best method to find squid. You're covering ground, and that is the best way to find them. The next best thing to do is when you do find them, hit mark on your GPS and keep constantly drifting over that area, and you'll quite often find that the squid will sit in one area. Now, the time of the year that we are in now, I like to call it squid season. It's one of my favorite seasons of the year, where the squid lay their eggs and they protect their eggs, and they are in seriously, seriously good numbers. And you can anchor on them. Now, if you're the first boat there or the only boat there, you can anchor on the eggs and have the time of your life. But the problem is, if you anchor on the squid eggs, it stuffs everyone else up. That means no one else can get on them. So if you are the second or third boat there, and other people, they've got the nice routine of drifting over it, and you're just there plonking around and just plonk the anchor in and stuff them up, they're going to have the shits with you, let's be honest, and they're probably going to start throwing sinkers at you because you've literally ruined their session. So be mindful, if you're the first boat there, the first boat to find them, anchor on it, by all means. But if you are not the first boat there and there's multiple boats there, just join in on the drift with the guys and you can all have a good time in catching squid. The next question is for you, Patrick, from Damien. It says, Danger, can you give us an insight into trade period given your experience with it? Regards, Damien.
Well, our wonderful producer, Redmond Joel Brooks, he's been handling all of Trade Radio's trade work over the past week, and obviously trades, they officially start, I think it's Monday. Free agency started yesterday. It's an interesting time. Like at the moment, we're not seeing any big curveballs of any big name being thrown up. Obviously, that was one of the discussion points. I think it was pre-grand final when there was all this talk around Lachie Neal. So there will be, as there always is, a shock trade that occurs. But quite often, the majority of the players that we've heard and have been spoken about so far, this has been organised for quite some time. So Gerra leaving Fremantle, in my experience, I would say this hasn't been something that's just been thought about over the last month. Now, we as players will always say, I want to focus on footy, and once the season finishes, then I'll start to, you know, I'll get myself organised and then I'll think about it. Now, it's a, it is a cop-out. It's just what we, you have to say as a player, because the reality is, of course, you think about your future. That's what everyone, it's only natural. So you're planning on what you want to do far in advance to the end of the season, and far in advance to focusing just on footy. It's, or certainly cruel, in my experience.
It's a bit of a cruel game, though. Like, I'm looking at some of the people that have thrown themselves into retirement due to, obviously, contracts ending. I don't think a lot of players are actually ready to go, Pat, to tell you the honest truth. I don't know. Name one for me.
No, absolutely not.
Josh Jenkins from the Cats. Josh Jenkins from the Cats. He's a prime example, I think.
No, and it's like for so many players, it's your identity. That's all you've known for such a long period of time. You finish school at 17, 18, and then you're thrust into an AFL environment. So it comes on very, very quickly. But in regards to trades, a lot of the time there's a lot of pre-planning from clubs and players that go into discussions that happen on behind the scenes. And then there will be a few curveballs throughout this trade period, which there always is. There's some clubs that, you know, more difficult to deal with than others, and it seems to draw out every time, you know, whatever specific club, you know, is mentioned, and that's always one of the last deals. But that's footy. You know, clubs have responsibility, and you know, list managers have a responsibility to get the best deal for their players. So it's fascinating. It always is. It's one of the highest rating I suppose, events that happen in our game, because you can finish trade period and every team wins a grand final, because every team is framing their results in a positive light. So it's different to the season proper, because only one team wins the granny. Trade period finishes and it's we've won. We're all successful.
Unless you're Collingwood from last year. Give us one.
Collingwood are going to win, because they're going to get a young player by the name of last name of Dacos, who, if he's not the first pick, he would have been the second. And he's going to be a very good player for them. So I think, you know, they've got a strong hand.
Give us one. Go on, just quickly. Who's going to be an upset trade player? You must have something for us, something good. Who's going to be an upset?
Well, there's no upsets. I mean, it doesn't take a huge amount of intelligence to know that the ones that take longer, if you're dealing with Adrian, there's no one that drives a harder bargain at the Don. So you know, that's footy, you know, and that's the club's responsibility. So it's going to be interesting to see. Redmond, our winner, I think it's got to be Ben around the squid. So yeah. Ben, send us in a direct message to our socials, and we'll get out a Real Brand Fishing top and hat to you. That wraps up our social club. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you send it into our socials throughout the week for your chance to be featured on the show. And if you are, and we read out you as our winner.
Don't go anywhere. There's plenty more Real Adventures after the break.
Gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Our special guest this morning is Steve from Water's Edge Houseboats. We're talking about Lake Eildon, a beautiful place as well. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, guys. How are you going?
We're going very well. We thank you for coming on this morning. Now, tell us about Water's Edge Houseboats, where you're located, and why it's a wonderful place to take your family on your next fishing adventure, because Paul Worsling couldn't recommend you highly enough. So if Paul recommends it, we reckon it's pretty damn good.
Paul's a great guy. We know we're doing things right. When you get a guy like Paul comes up and spends time on a houseboat with us for his holidays. So we know we're hitting a nail on the head when that happens with the profession he's in. Water's Edge Houseboat, Lake Eildon. We are probably the largest houseboat hire company up at Lake Eildon, newest houseboats. Sneak preview, we've got one under getting built at the moment, due for launch. Was supposed to be before Christmas, but COVID sort of slowed us down a little bit. And we don't really want to tell too many people about Lake Eildon, which is one of Australia's best kept secrets, I reckon. It's just a great location, not far out of Melbourne. Easy drive from anywhere in Victoria, and a great family destination.
Steve, take us through the vessels that you have on offer, because some groups want to have groups of six, some people want to have groups of 12, whatnot. How many people can you cater for, and how many boats do you have?
At the moment, we have six hire boats on the water, another one due very soon after Christmas. Currently, we can sleep around 100 people on the water, which varies from three-bedroom, 10-berth boats up to four-bedroom, 12-berth boats, and plans to do a few more extra boats over the next 12 to 18 months.
Steve, what about for those that have little to no experience when it comes to driving a houseboat boat or boat in general? How does that work? Are you eligible to be able to take them away, or is there a license that you need to have?
In the hire drive fleet, houseboats come under. No license, just have a full car license. We have a comprehensive induction solution that takes people through the full operation, how to navigate, how to secure the boat, how not to get into trouble. We actually drive the boats in and out of marina, so there's no close combat with other boats. That's where most of the accidents happen, especially on busy days when you've got kids on jet skis and other boat craft floating around. And once they get out onto the expanse of Lake Eildon, which has around about 600 kilometres of shoreline, so large body of water in Lake Eildon, currently sitting just over 80% at capacity, six times the volume of Sydney Harbour. So plenty of places to go and see.
A lot of water.
And what about times of the year? Obviously, at the moment, everything's been affected by availability with COVID when people can get out. But from what we hear from the government, once everyone's double vaxxed, there's going to be an opening, and there is certainly with rural Victoria at the moment.
Yep.
When do you recommend, when's the best time to go and visit the region?
Oh, look, any time of the year is a great time to go up to Eildon, up in the high country. Even before COVID, we found that a lot of off-season trade was coming with families that were spending quality family time together with their kids, get out on the boat, confined space, close, and there was a lot more traffic around that family-orientated get-together. But any time of the year, if you're into the water sports, summer, a bit warmer, a bit chilly going for a swim this time of year. But we have a couple of kids the last probably 6 weeks ago going swimming up there, so mustn't be that cold in. But fishing, again, we have a lot of fishing groups come through, and it's just grabbing a lot more notoriety about you just pull up on behind of a houseboat, jump in and have a nice warm shower. Out you go, back out to the fishing. So any time of the year.
I'm glad you mentioned the fishing after the water sports work there, Steve, because I know Paul Worsling. I actually seen him during the year. He was out there on the houseboats, and he had his little Staby car. Oh, no, it was his Extreme, actually. He was out there in his Extreme catching some wonderful trout and a few other species. Now, does he hit mark on the GPS on these things or what, so we know where to go fishing if we do come down and hire?
So what you're asking, you want me to grab his GPS off him?
Oh, you got to things you got to do, Steve. Come on, mate. Paying good bucks for these houseboats.
Yeah, I know which way he heads and that sort of thing. He's, but yeah, you've got Paul. You've got we have had the guys on the fishing show. They turned up. Hope I can mention them. They turned up just before a lockdown and kept the boat for an extra 7 days before they brought it back. We thought we'd have trouble getting rid of them. But yeah, no, look, it's there's plenty of fish there. Even the local, some of the other local businesses what do it a little bit hard as well with those lockdowns. The best I can suggest is anyone that's going fishing up at Lake Eildon, go into the local bait and tackle shop, ask the guys in there, they'll gladly tell you what's biting, where they're biting, and the best food to put on it.
Now, Steve, you spoke off the top of the interview, the different sizes. Now, there's five different size boats in your hire fleet. I want to talk about the Edge, because I think when some people think of houseboats, they think of an old rickety barge that's tiny, that doesn't cater for much. But looking through your social media, and you can follow Lakeiron's Luxury Houseboats on Instagram, the Edge is absolutely amazing when it comes to its amenities. It's double story. It is a palace, but under a hull.
Yeah. It's basically, I like to call it the Toorak flat with floats. yeah, you've got four bedrooms, queen bedrooms, couple of bathrooms on that boat. It's got granite bench tops. So, yeah, a lot of people remark that it's actually better than a lot of their houses. So, and that's why we're always looking at the ways we can develop these holidays away from home with everything. So the next boat actually is coming out with five bedrooms, five en suites, all downstairs. So it's with the duckboard down, it's probably about 2 metres short of half of an Olympic swimming pool in length. So you're not going to get cabin fever on them.
And I think that's an important part, especially if, so I use my example. I've got two kids, 4 and 2. You know, you've got to be very careful when it comes to the water because they can't swim and haven't been able to go to swimming lessons over the past little while because of COVID. But with the way that the boats are designed, they're extremely safe because nothing opens just out on to water.
No, so the Edge was the first new hire boat built on Lake Eildon in 12 years when we built that. Built it down at Hastings and then moved it, trucked it up to Lake Eildon. It's got pool fencing around it, so the same pool locks with, you know, if you've got a swimming pool at home. The flywire doors to go out onto the decks, the catches and locks are above the normal height. So even higher up, so to make it even a bit safer. The windows wind out with fly wires on the inside, which helps people relax, I suppose, a lot more around water. But again, great place to teach kids boat safety as well and water safety. My daughter was 4 when we first started taking her up there. She would stand up in the cabin to go to the toilet and put her life jacket on. So, and I think it was about 14 and we're still trying to talk her out of not putting her life jacket on just to go to the toilet.
That's always a good thing, though.
Yeah. And look, one of the greatest benefits I've gained as a parent is the son and daughter basically grew up there driving boats, learning how to drive boats, been an absolute breeze. And their awareness and perception out on the road now that they've both got their licenses, you can't beat it. You can't beat the training and the experience they gained just being involved with water.
So, Steve, how do we get in contact with you if anyone's looking to head to Lake Eildon and to hire out a houseboat for their next trip away? How do we get in contact?
Go through the web. Our website, you can look online, you can chat to us online. It has a contact number. We're basically open. We've been known to take phone calls to 1 o'clock in the morning. So basically it's like the rest of Australia. We hopefully we'll get back to the stage where we're always open very shortly. So through Facebook, through our website or call, we'd love chatting.
Steve from Water's Edge Houseboats on Lake Eildon. If you want to follow their Instagram, Water's Edge Houseboats Hire, one of our great mates, Paul Westling, couldn't recommend them any higher, and that's certainly good enough for us. Steve, thank you for joining Real Adventures this morning.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the invite. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Steve.
Cheers.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic, mobile living made easy. It's time for Red's Review, and we're talking about Garmin's Surround View camera system and why, if you've got the budget, it may be perfect for your next boat. Aaron, let's talk about docking. When it comes to spending time in marinas and you've got very little room, majority of marinas aren't exactly designed to have a huge amount of width in regards to maneuvering your craft, and this makes it incredibly easy.
Yeah, it's a little bit like parking at Coles or Safeway, to be honest with you, Pat, because my ute doesn't fit in any bloody park either. And here I am wanting a Ram and I can't even park my Amarok. So it's very similar to all the marinas right around the country, to tell the truth. But it makes it a hell of a lot easier. And it's especially if you are a person listening right now and have a bigger vessel. And what I mean by bigger vessel, anything probably from that 30 foot up, this is probably where you're going to start to really consider the 360 camera. So the surround view 360 camera, and like you said, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's multiple cameras that can give you a bird's eye view basically of where you are positioned in a marina, and it's going to basically assist you in parking the vessel.
Now, we see this on quite a few cars, upmarket cars now, that come to the marketplace, where you've got little beep, 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 beep from every single angle. Well, this is the same version. I'm not sure if you get the beeping, but this is the same version, but in a vessel setting. And as you said, it's your 10 meter plus, 30 foot. But if you don't spend a huge amount of time behind the helm, like, it's easy for you, Aaron, because you do. You spend a huge amount of time working in and out of marinas. But for those that don't, one of the biggest stresses is launching and retrieving. And if you're a 30-foot plus boat, you don't spend a huge amount of time driving it. It is getting it out of the marina without taking out half of the boats at the marina, especially under wind.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it better. Wind is an absolute prick for big boats. It makes life so hard. And the way the cameras are placed and positioned around the boat, you've got one on the stern, right at the stern. You got two roughly around your midship, and then you got three on your bow, one on the port and one on the starboard side, as well as one right where your anchor, bowsprit, or whatever you want to call it, the front of the boat is positioned. So positioned really well around the boat. The only thing is, like you said, different between a car is when you've got marine in front of it, it's probably an extra 20 grand straight up, Pat.
The other thing that we like about it is the engineering behind this camera system is everything is through hull installation. So not only is it securely fitted, but the calibration of the camera system, it's easy to maintain. And if things need to be replaced, it's easily replaceable because you essentially, it's screwed in. So you can screw it in and you can screw it out if things go wrong. It's not an accessory that sits, you know, 10, 15 centimetres off the boat, so you could potentially knock it off during your next trip out. So everything's really well fitted, and because it's through hull, it actually looks quite nice and neat. So if you want more information on Garmin's surround view camera system, head to garmin.com.au, and that is Reg Review.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. We're very much running out of time. It's time for Red's Tip for the Week.
It is, Pat. We've only got a very short amount of time, like you said, so it's going to be short and sharp with how to retrieve and cast for certain species of fish. Now, the reason that we're going to talk about it is because there's a lot of people chasing flathead like yourself and whatnot down Lake Tyers, Mallacoota, right around the whole country, to be honest with you. Like, we had a report from Logan's Dam up at the start of the show in Queensland. So when you're retrieving for certain species, you need to have certain control. And I'll give you a good example. Dan Mackerel, when he chases brim, if you think you're going slow, go even slower. So there's certain fish that will respond in different ways. So for brim, flathead, make sure you're doing different things. The brim, get it nice and slow. The flathead, make sure you've got the head digging into the sand and kicking it up nice and slow so the flathead get disturbed. They're a lazy fish and they will attack when you do kick it back up, but let it fall nice and slow. Then you've got species like salmon that I caught during the week. If I had a cast of the metal jig out during the week and slowly retrieved it, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been hitting the bottom. They wouldn't have been reactive to it. Like a kingfish, when you're jigging for them, the faster it goes, the better it is. So when you're chasing species, make sure that you're very smart on how, especially surface casting or whatever casting you're doing, make sure you're very specific on the techniques that you use for every species of fish. And that's Red's tip this week. And I think you're getting the sack on the gaff this week, Pack.
We're all getting the sack on the gaff. We've run out of time. This has been Real Adventures. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week.